Hello and welcome back to another episode of Binge List and Box Office Hits, the podcast about all things film, TV and streaming, with your host, Shannon Holiday, and me, Letitia Thomas.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Binge List and Box Office Hits, the podcast about all things film, TV and streaming. I'm your host, Shannon Holiday, and I'm joined in the studio once again with Letitia Thomas. How are we doing this morning, Tish?
We're good. We've just had some coffee.
We had some coffee. We've gotten up very early this morning to get our episode done and dusted.
Well, Shannon got up early this morning.
I know, which is very rare because we usually record this well after midday.
Yeah, I'm usually like up and have done things.
Yeah, you've done your washing and stuff this morning.
You've
been up very early. No, I came over early this morning because we are doing a back-to-back episode this week. We figured that it would be more appropriate to get this particular episode out week of recording, and then we'll also record our regular scheduled episode after this one, a bit later once we have a bit more snacks.
Yeah, we need to go get snacks.
I'm really keen to get some snacks after this, bit of lunch.
Yeah. Thinking cheese and crackers.
Yeah. I haven't had like a good, you know, cheese and cracker day, like a bit of brie, a bit of gouda.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they go pretty hard.
Yeah, brie.
Yeah, very nice.
Very good.
Cheese talk.
Love cheese.
If anyone's got any really like particular cheeses that want us to try,
yeah,
let us know.
Mum got me into eating like really nice cheeses when I was a kid because her and grandma would go shopping and then they'd come back with like bread rolls and cheese and they'd be like, okay, this is like the weekly thing. So I got really into like nice cheeses at a very young age to the point
Mum would be like, oh, so you're a bit of a snob.
Yeah, Mum would be like, would you like, you know, sliced cheese? And I'd be like, I'm not really a
singles
fan.
I don't think so. Not in this house.
If it's not brie, I don't want it.
I'm not on board.
Mum was like,
this.
Oh, I've created a monster.
I was speaking to someone the other day and I can't remember who. Do you remember Bega Stringer cheese? Did you ever try that or have that in your lunchbox as a kid?
I didn't, but I do know what it's the one that.
Yeah. You kind of like, you peel it off this giant stick. Yeah. It's very bizarre.
But I also, my dad used to feed me like, do you remember like what we used to call in my house plastic cheese?
Yeah, the singles.
I don't actually know. It's just, yeah.
It's Kraft singles.
Yeah, I used to eat that on ham, white bread.
Yeah, toasty. Look, many a singles. Have you ever tried to toast Kraft singles?
Yeah, no, that's what they used to do. It kind of.
But they don't really like melt, do they? Weird. It kind of just like burns to the bread. It's very bizarre.
Yeah, look, it's been a while since I've eaten that.
Colby cheese is the best for melting. So if you ever want to have toasties, get yourself some Colby.
Oh, good to know.
Yeah.
And that's our cheese talk.
That's our cheese talk. That was not scripted. So moving on. How has your week been, Letitia? What have you been up to? Tell me a tale.
Look, I've been very procrastinating. But, you know, sometimes that happens. I just need to buckle down this weekend and catch up on some work.
Yeah.
But it's been an interesting week. We went and saw Furiosa, which is the topic. Well, Mad Max in general, the topic of this week. So we'll get into that a little bit later.
Yeah, we did go and see that. Do you want to talk about what we actually did for that
screening though? So the actor, which is the Australian Academy of Cinema Television Arts, you know, thing.
Yep.
They held a screening in Brisbane. It was like a free, just an actor event. So we went to that. It was kind of fun to sit in a room of people that care about film and watch it. Although they did give everyone like beers and wines beforehand. So there was a lot of people getting up in that 2-hour
going
movie
to the laboratory.
You can only do so much when you've drunk before. So
yeah, it was really good. It was the first thing like that I've been to where you go to the movies like an hour beforehand and you kind of like, you're supposed to mingle for a little while, have drinks. There was a photo booth kind of thing set up for.
Yeah, they always have photographers.
Yeah, it was kind of cool to be involved, even though we were like, yeah, we're just going to hang out and just kind of, you know, people watch a little bit. Mm. But it was a really good event. And like you said, it was amazing to be in a room with also fellow industry loving people. And it's been the first time in a very long time I've been to a cinema with like a full cinema to see a film.
Yeah, it was cool.
Because it definitely changes the atmosphere and makes it a little bit better.
I think my last like big, like full packed out cinema might've been like, you know, one of the End Games or something.
Yeah,
like that
was my last one as well. It was End Game. Cause if we went first night, Endgame,
I think
it was sold out.
I feel like I saw it twice. I must've gone maybe by myself possibly. Mm. And then, you know, like another friend wanted to go. So I was like, I'll see it twice.
Yeah. I went twice as well. Cause I was like, I loved it.
I don't even.
Two different friend groups as well.
But yeah, that was sort of fun.
That was fun this week, although getting out of the car park.
Oh, dear Lord.
So we parked on the second level down of this like underground car park where this was at. It was at the barracks in Brisbane.
Yeah.
So if anyone's been to the Palace Cinemas.
Don't barracks, park in their car parking.
Oh my Lord. Because everyone left at the same time. We were on the bottom one. So it was an absolute traffic jam trying to get out. And I think it was an extra half an hour to 40 minutes of trying to get out of this car park. Because it was the whole thing with like, it was like paperless and you had to tap your card when you got in. And then also when you got out, there was a code if you wanted 4 hours of like cheaper parking. The whole system is flawed. And then I think everyone was ruining the machine as they came up to it.
I don't know.
Because when we went up to the actual boom gate, there was a dude there trying to like facilitate how it works. And we got to tap on and then he's like, oh, that didn't work, and just let us out.
Yeah, so I didn't pay for parking.
We
it was
got
great.
Free parking, even though it was supposed
but
to cost
was them. That worth sitting there for 20 minutes?
No, honestly, I would have been happier just to get on the way and get home.
And then go to work the next morning, yeah.
Yeah, because even like the lady behind us was like, got out of her car and came up and was like, is this normal? I'm like, we honestly don't know. We don't know.
We don't know.
This doesn't seem normal. I'm trapped in a car park. Too bad. Yeah, luckily none of us had claustrophobia or anything.
No.
Because it was a bit of an experience.
But yeah, that was that. I honestly trying to think what I've
yeah, what have you been consuming this week?
Look, a lot of research for the next couple episodes coming up. So I watched, the last 2 weeks, watched a ton of The Muppets.
We're going to
get into that one. That's
later
one of our
this
episodes.
Afternoon.
Yeah. And then we are planning on doing one on David Fincher coming up. So I watched Zodiac, which I really like that, but I don't want to spoil too much
review,
of that.
Yeah.
And then I've been re-binge watching Mindhunter, which
you did say that.
Absolutely love. So I'm partway through season 2 now. But the only other thing I watched that was sort of different and set apart from that was I watched The Dry 2, Force of Nature.
Yes. You messaged me being like, should I watch this? Renting it's like $6. Is it worth it? I'm like, it's worth $6.
Yeah.
It's worth $6.
I really, really enjoyed this one. Not enough probably to buy it.
Maybe
down the line.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was good. It was a good sequel. And I think everyone that they cast in it did a really good job. The young girl that's sort of like an ex-addict, her character, I had worked with her in uni days. Mm. And I knew then watching her do some of the stuff, I was like, oh, she's got something. Like she's one of these actors that have that thing. And then seeing her in this was really cool because she's a lot – her character's a lot darker than who she is sort of.
As a person.
Yeah, she's pretty bubbly. So I was like, damn, she's.
She pulled it off.
She's got great. It, yeah.
Yeah. I thoroughly enjoyed it too. I saw it at the cinema back in February when it came out. And like, I'm a fan of this series. I really like Eric Bana. I think he's a great actor. And I think when he does Australian things like this, it's really cool. It wasn't as strong as The Dry, in my opinion. I thought the mystery was better in The Dry. And this one didn't relate the flashback earlier scenes with his younger character to the overall arcing story of this one, whereas I think The Dry did that better.
Yes, I did think the flashbacks in this weren't entirely necessary in the same way as obviously in the first one. It's very necessary. It makes a lot of sense as to why there's the flashes back and forth, but in this one it seemed sort of weaker. I think it would have just worked because obviously there's the plot in this, it's why he's deeply invested is the flashbacks, but I think if they just dug into like him feeling guilty for pushing Anatole's character into all this stuff and getting her into the mess that she gets into, that would have held up enough.
Yeah.
And then maybe would have given him a bit more screen time because he didn't have a lot.
No, he was like less of a character in this one.
Yeah.
Whereas the first one follows him throughout the town and uncovering the mystery from his perspective the whole time, basically. This one just didn't feel like it was from his perspective.
No.
He was there, but
good film. But,
it also suffered from just lack of knowledge of release date and moving around and marketing issues and stuff. So this one went by the wayside in terms of how successful it could have been. Also calling it Force of Nature, The Dry 2, it's not the best title. Like it's kind of cringe, but also no one's going to realize it's a series, I guess.
Yeah, I just think there's a problem now with the way we're titling things because we want everything to be like, oh, franchised. But then they just end up with these weird titles like The Dry, Force of Nature, and then they're all in like the wetlands.
Force of Nature makes sense.
Force of Nature makes sense.
The Dry 2, though, when it's in Victoria High Country.
Yeah, it's like what? It yeah. doesn't. Yeah,
but it's just to make sure they put more bums in seats. It's like, oh, it's from the first drive. It's the same character. Yes,
but I don't know why they
don't need to.
Can't just put that in the. Like the title or the description, you yeah. know, this a sequel to The Drive. And
it doesn't need to be a
it's
subtitle.
It's Force of Nature. Like, you yeah. know, it's in that,
mm.
but it doesn't need to be a subtitle.
Well, you never used to do that.
No, like,
if
we
you
never
think
did.
Of like, what are those? Are they, is it John Ryan film? Jack Ryan?
Jack Ryan.
And it used to be like The Hunt for Red October. And then like, was it this, whatever the other ones are. They didn't have like a Jack Ryan feature.
No.
Like, it was just a series based on books. Like, you would just go and be know it was the next one in that series or something.
Yeah, they marketed more clearly in the past, I
yeah,
think.
Yeah, I just, yet again, this movie definitely suffered from marketing issues.
Definitely did. I'm hoping that it makes good on its, like, you know, video on demand, DVD sales, that
I
kind
think
of thing.
That's where it will actually make more.
It's been
its
doing
money.
All right because I work in a company that sells DVDs and it's been doing all right with that at the moment, but.
We'll see. I think, we'll see. If it goes to streaming and that, I think it'll do quite well. So if it gets sold to streaming services, let's see how that
I
goes.
I hope so. It's Australian, so maybe Stan might take it.
Yeah. Depends where The Dry went. I think that was on Netflix. It could end up on Netflix.
Could be Netflix.
We'll see how it goes. There is a third book in the trilogy, because it is a book series first, Australian book writer, book series. And I hope the third one does get made, even though this one wasn't super successful, because I've read the third one and it was a really good mystery. I felt like the third book's mystery was better than the second. So I'd like to see that on screen.
Yeah, I'd like to see it because I don't really want to have to read the first two books.
Well, that too.
It's not that I don't want to read them. I've got a lot I need to get through
You've got other things to worry about. And it is a trilogy, so his character is only in three books. So just to end it out, to bookend it would be really nice to see.
Yeah, I think that's all you need. And it's fun to have Australian mysteries on screen.
Yeah, I really like them. It's one of my favorite genres.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. That was good that you saw that. One of the other things I watched was, it's another Fincher thing, so I won't go into detail too much. I did watch The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the US version.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that I did thoroughly enjoy it. Really cool film. I will go into like finer details in another couple of weeks. What else I did watch was The Family.
Wow. Yeah, I hadn't heard about this until 5 minutes ago.
I remember when it was advertised. It came out around 2012. So it's about 12 years old now. And it had a fair bit of marketing, but I just didn't go see it. And I was like, damn, I wish I saw that film. Because it was, you know, pretty cool trailers and stuff for it. I chucked it on and I was like, it's kind of not what I was expecting. I don't know why I was expecting more action throughout the film. So it's a mafia-based film where this family has to go into witness protection in France. So loved it, France. And the whole time is them trying to integrate as like this mafia family into like a small French town. And then obviously there's this overarching plot with as why they're in witness protection and people come and try and kill them at the end in the French town. And they all come together and kind of save each other. It just didn't land for me. I don't know, like that whole fish out of water kind of got old really quick. And I just, none of the characters were like jumping off the screen to me, like in terms of like, oh, I really like this character. It wasn't amazing. So a little bit disappointing.
Is it a story that's relatively grounded in reality?
Yeah, it's completely real.
Oh, that's interesting
Except
for him.
Except for the one scene where. Because
it's a Luc Besson film.
Yeah.
I think that's how you say his name. Probably
Luc.
Not.
Luc? It'd be Luc. Luc. Be Luke.
Luc Besson. I don't know.
Luc Besson.
Make some cool films.
There was one scene in particular where Robert De Niro's character gets taken to like it's the local French film festival thing, and they were supposed to be showing in America. Not really, but just for the town, essentially. Yeah. He gets taken to, because he's not allowed out of his house, so they let him to go into this one thing.
You can go watch a movie.
Basically. And Tommy Lee Jones is his carer.
Oh, yeah.
So they're both just sitting there in the audience, and they're supposed to put on this American film, and he was going to make like commentary on it. But they accidentally sent the wrong film. So the film they did get was, pretty funnily enough, Goodfellas, which Robert De Niro is watching Goodfellas, and then he's like, just see him smile and stuff. It's great. And then they make him comment on it afterwards. It was, that scene in particular was great. The rest was just a bit like family drama, fish out of water kind of film. Little bit disappointed. The other film I watched last night was a Mel Gibson film, which I was like, thematic with this episode.
Yeah,
I've been wanting to watch it. I saw the DVD at
work.
At work for a few years. I was like, oh, I kind of want to check this out. I like action films where it's just literally the story is just action. Nothing really else to it. It was called Bloodfather. And
yeah, okay, that say no more.
A Mel Gibson film called Bloodfather. It was filmed in 2014. It didn't get released till 2016. So it was filmed at, it was shown at Cannes.
Okay.
Cannes Film Festival in 2016 and then sold and distributed after that. It's about this, his daughter who goes missing for a period of time, and then you kind of get her backstory at the start where she's been, she's like, you know, in with these really bad people. They're like drug runners and stuff, and her boyfriend tries to get her to kill this girl in a family they're trying to hold up. She accidentally shoots the boyfriend. Well, she shoots the boyfriend to get away. And then she goes to her dad, Mel Gibson, to help her out on because she's on the run from the cartel now. And he's like this ex-con. He's a tattoo artist in the back of a caravan type. And
is it American?
It's American. Okay, yep. It's American.
I just want to get a picture.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's like set in New Mexico or something. Uh-huh. So imagine like kind of deserty. He's in this trailer just doing tattoos like in the back of like, yeah. He plays this role really, really well because he's like, he's very sarcastic too. So when she comes back into his life, all these people try and shoot up the, like the caravan and that. He's like, oh, great. Now that's aggravated assault as he's like, like trying to beat up this guy. He's very, he plays it very sarcastically. And like I was really entertained during this film. I won't go into like where it ends up in that, but for a film that clearly was made on probably a lesser budget.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't a huge release. It wasn't a huge like money spending film or anything. I was thoroughly impressed by how it turned out. Like it's pretty good.
You know what? If I have an estranged father, I want him to be able to help me out if it all goes to, that's not going to happen in my life.
No, but, no, you don't have a Mel Gibson type father though.
No, but he is absent.
He is absent though. Well, no, she went missing. It wasn't his. It was the other way around. So, you know, a bit different.
Yeah. Well, I zoned out.
Yep. Yeah. It's fine. You didn't watch the film.
So I heard fine. Fathers and just.
Fathers and gone. No, it was.
You
it
can
was,
laugh at home.
It's it was fine. It was on Stan. I quite enjoyed it.
You have
it.
Stan back?
Look, I won't tell you that I created a new email address just to get a free month, but I did.
Oh, I've run out of those. So
I created it last night and then just logged in.
So that's
I
got fair.
33 days, which I'll cancel before.
Oh, cool. I might watch Hacks.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was planning on paying for it, but.
I'll add you on. Yeah, there you go. Well, I mean, they're very expensive now.
No, they
are. I'm just saying, look.
I say that as if I'm not leeching off 90% of yours.
Everyone's leeching.
That being said, I didn't ask you to have
them. They are very expensive. I'm pretty sure this one said it was going to be like $22.99 after like the 30 days.
Yeah.
And then there's a $15 sport package. And I'm like, this is ridiculous that we're paying this much for one streaming service, let alone like, I think Netflix is about $24. I think that Amazon's got up to about $14 now. Mm-hmm. It's still the cheapest one, which is pretty good. And I'm pretty sure Binge is around $17 or $18. Let alone I'm not paying for the Apple one.
No.
There's other ones as well.
But you know how like Amazon gets you though? It's like, yeah, it's the cheapest one, but you can get free shipping. So then you just buy all your stuff off Amazon. So they're getting money
in other ways.
Like they're fine.
They're fine. Yeah. I do use Amazon for like deliveries and stuff. Yeah, exactly. So it does definitely help. And
if you weren't paying the $14, would you go to Amazon or would you just go somewhere else?
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Jeff Bezos. Is it Bezos?
Bezos.
I can't remember. They're all insane.
They're all insane. Yeah, so I don't know. I'm just going on a way to save a little bit of money for a little while. Like, I'm sorry, industry, but yeah, it's tough on the old wallet every now and then.
Oh, listen, I was definitely planning on buying a gift card at work. It's a couple dollars cheaper.
Yeah, and do it that way.
Do it that way.
Yeah, any way you can save a buck. Do it.
Gotta do it.
Absolutely do it. Yeah. So I watched that on Stan and there's a few other things that I'll mention in the next episode that I've been recently watching as well.
Well, there you go, Brittany. I will be watching Hacks soon.
So, yeah, there you go.
I haven't got your script yet, but I will be watching Hacks.
Yay.
Yay. Yay. She's my agent now.
She is your agent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Publicist, all of it.
No, she's just on me. She's like, oh, come on.
We've got a schedule. Keep it to it. We should get into the main topic now, I think. What do you reckon?
I think we should.
We should get into the Mad Max saga. Okay. How do you feel about, now you've watched 1, 2, 3, the new one, like, you know, Fury Road and then also Furiosa. How do you feel about being in the wasteland?
Honestly, I really love this like saga and world that George Miller's created. So originally I hadn't seen any of them. I mean, most people my age hadn't because they'd been and gone for a long time.
The first three was a chunk of time.
Yeah.
Well in the 80s.
And then watched
the new revival series.
I missed Fury Road when it came out. I think I just finished school and I was broke and you know, like
2015.
It was a weird time that year. And everyone was talking about it, but I was just like, I thought I had to watch the first three before I saw that.
Yeah.
And then I realized sort of recently that I didn't. So last year I went and watched Fury Road and I was like, oh, I get the hype.
You completely enjoyed it for a different perspective.
And then I was like, okay, I'll have to go back and watch the original trilogy. And then knowing that Furiosa was coming out, I went back and watched it the last, 2-3 weeks?
Yeah.
Because we were like, hey, we're going to do an episode.
We did have it planned down the track, which we're at now, but it was a while ago when we decided it. So you eventually watched the original three films. I think, didn't you buy Road Warrior for like $2 or something? It was very cheap.
Yeah, I did. I benefit from the job that I work in.
Yeah, it was
very the only cheap reason I'm still there, let's be honest. Cheap movies.
Cheap DVDs. Yeah, the originals. I watched the first one so long ago, but I do remember the story. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was great. But it was very obviously shot at a time, I guess, when I think like Ozploitation films was kind of like, I think just it was in that part of time.
Yeah.
And not much budget. Clearly not much budget.
This was like a no budget film. And I really like this one. And if no one's seen them, but you've seen the new ones, go back and watch the original trilogy. Because what it does, it gives you appreciation for the world that you're now in, this post-apocalyptic world. It gives you context for how we got
there
and why, you know, like gasoline and fuel is so important as a currency now. Like it explains a lot, but it's not boring.
No.
To watch. And you can see in this one that he had an idea, but he had no way of executing it in the same way. And as they go on, they get more and more just mad in terms of production and visuals and stuff. You can kind of see the seeds of it in
the original ones.
Yeah.
I love the way he shoots as well.
His style got really, really stylized as they go. Mm. You can kind of see hits Fury Road and then he did 3,000 Years of Longing, which is a completely different thing.
But that's his, yeah.
You can see that he's kind of really figured out what he wants to make in his own like
unique
vision.
Way.
And that really comes through in the later part of his career, I think.
Yeah, yeah. The way he films certain action scenes and stuff as well, he'll like up the frames per second to make it look like more frantic. Mm-hmm. I just love that. He does that a lot in Fury Road. He also does it a lot in The Road Warrior too, the second one.
Yeah.
It just creates that sense of chaos.
This whole world he's created is the most bizarre. I love the costuming he puts these like, what are they called? They're like violent gangs, but they're sort of...
The newer ones or the older ones?
Even the old ones.
The old ones were the biker gang. Yeah, the first one was the biker gang.
They're biker gangs, but they're sort of rebels and stuff. But they have this very, like...
It's tribalistic.
They're the straight man, right? Because they're macho.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you'd see them at
Mardi Gras. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like these like leather daddies type, but they're macho. They're the macho men. I don't mean that as a derogatory term. I just mean it in general. But it's so...
It's
interesting.
Yeah. The way they've gone.
Two things
like,
are married.
Future. That version of post-apocalyptic slash futuristic look is a very like homoerotic look as well at the same time.
It's kind of amazing.
It's a bit, it's like two things at once.
At once. That shouldn't go together, but.
But it just.
They
does.
Work.
And it's not just like the time and place for the original three films as well. Even the newer ones like Fury Road and Furiosa, like. Exactly the same styles. Like it's still there.
It's so camp, but it's camp in a real macho way.
Yeah.
I was trying to explain to my grandma these films last night because she hadn't seen them, but she like had remembered them. And I was just trying to give her like a gist of like what it is. And it was like super hard to explain to her. And I was like, hey, do you remember? Because she'd been talking to me about a couple Australian films recently. I was like, do you remember Priscilla, Queen of the Desert? She's like, yeah. I'm like, so take that kind of idea. But then like, instead of it being like, gay, it's like real macho and like violent, but like kind of the same thing, but like very different. And instead of just like going around town, they're like committing violent acts. Yeah. It's weird. And she's like, I kind of get it. And I'm like,
you're like
yeah,
no,
that's
you probably don't.
Probably
but
don't,
that's fine.
It's the closest I can
it's
get to give
hard
you
to explain.
Like Australiana and like
I feel like the Australian element to it kind of is lost past Fury Road and Furiosa.
Yeah, I think so.
Do you feel like it's very Australian in the first three and then
definitely
after that it kind of becomes a more quote unquote global feeling of a film.
I think so. But then in saying that, like, I've seen a lot of reviews about Furiosa and everyone's like, apparently this isn't like lingo for the film. It's just actually how they speak over in Australia.
Yeah, I'm like, maybe that's just, I was just used to what the way I was speaking.
I think, yeah. And I think to us, it feels that way because it's lost this version of Australia that we don't see so much anymore.
Yeah. I think because the first three are so set in like suburban ochre Australian, like it's so set in that kind of vibe. The way they speak is very ochre as well. But I think as a country, we've kind of evolved past that a little bit.
Yeah.
We've become more multicultural.
Definitely. So I think it is interesting. I love the first one. It's a very simple idea. Yeah. And then obviously you see how he goes from being just like a cop to the Mad Max character type.
Well, that's what I was going to bring up is, do you think that the first one came, like he came up with the idea of Mad Max. He made the film. It's obviously he is a police officer in what feels like it's supposed to be post-apocalyptic. Not really, but it is.
It's sort of like the descent of society.
Yeah, but then it's not really referenced again past that film that he was a part of a society. Like there's no other reference to police officers past that point. I feel like Mad Max 2, The Road Warrior was like a reset. Where it's like it's got the first movie's got elements in 2 past that, but not much else.
Yeah.
2 was kind of like that's where it kind of starts.
I think maybe even he had the idea for the character Mad Max, but he went, okay, I need to make a film that gets you to that point and explains the world and how we get there and everything like that. I think it was like the idea was maybe for something similar to the second one, but he went, okay, but I need to tell a story.
Yeah. An origin story.
To set up where I want to go with it. I feel like that may be what it was. Yeah. The idea was too big originally to tell it how we wanted to. So we had to
tell us that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because once you get to the second one, it's we're in the post-apocalyptic now. Society's gone.
Yeah.
And we're never coming back to it.
No. Yeah. The only reason is like 2 locations basically in the second one.
Yep.
That's it. Like the road where a lot of like that thing's blown up on, and then the actual big settlement that they're in the second one, which is clearly built for this. But it's like, that's it. That's all that's left is these kind of places that are built after this. What is the first one? There's like actual buildings and.
Yeah. But like, I think part of that like also was like
there.
No budget. So I think he had to definitely make the first one with the limitations, like practically that he had like no budget. So he couldn't go out to the desert. He had to tell it in
from a town.
Suburban because they needed to be able to get to set and stuff. Yeah. So I think
I appreciate that as well.
I think it was, had limitations, but he made it work. And that's what a good filmmaker does is they look at what they've got and they go, okay, how do we make this on what we have?
Yeah.
And from that, he's managed to spawn like 5 genius films.
Yeah, well, it's a huge franchise.
Hit and miss. But
Look, the middle one was a rough goal.
I did like
Beyond Thunderdome.
The second one, I thought that was one of his better ones. It's
probably my second favorite.
In this one. Yeah, me too.
I think it's my second favorite.
It's strong.
It's a very strong entry into Mad Max. And this is where kind of it catapulted the character and the franchise and Mel Gibson as an actor into the stardom was Mad Max 2. I just think it was a pretty much for the time, probably like a perfect action film.
I think so.
It was dark where it needed to be. And it was great action in terms of like the actual choreography of the action. And it was a good redemption arc.
I think it has something similar to what the idea of Mad Max is. And it's this, they're all kind of, because obviously the currency is fuel. They're all sort of these road warriors and bandits and whatnot. And that one does have, it's the road, similar to Fury Road, which then took off for a new generation where it's just a chase.
It's a giant chase.
And I think that's
scene.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
But we may as well just go in chronological order at this point because it's easiest. Beyond Thunderdome, let's really get into this one.
Yeah.
What was going on?
It was an odd movie and I can understand for a few reasons why it was different. So it's 2 films in one from my perspective.
Yeah, it's
You've got the Beyond the Thunderdome set piece, which is the first hour. And then after that, once he gets exiled from the town, is the second piece.
Yeah, it's weird.
2 films in one. It's 2 directors this time. So it's not just George Miller in this one. It's got Terry Hayes in it as well, I think. No, George Ogilville as the second director. So I don't know if like George Miller took the Thunderdome part and then the other George did the other part. But I also think the studio was trying to push for a wider audience. This is the only film that's like PG-13, so our M, not MA.
Yeah, it's weird.
So I think they're pushing for like a more of a kid-friendly kind of Mad Max film, which is weird. Well, I don't know why they'd go for that style, but yeah, I think it's just to make more money. And possibly just to sell toys as well, like the whole Star Wars effect.
Did it sell any toys?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't me know. Either.
But it was a weird film, so yeah.
Basically,
hard to talk about.
Max
hard to talk about.
Ends up in this town. I can't think what it's called. Do you remember?
No.
And it's run by Tina Turner as this like, because sort of this sort of does spawn what then becomes like different societies,
yeah,
that are governed by like lunatics,
warlords basically,
and warlords. Yeah. So she's like running it, but it's secretly like puppeted by this other guy. And he gets thrown into the Thunderdome.
Yeah, which is like a dome
cage fight.
Cage. It's a cage fight with springs.
Yeah,
they're on like springs. It's very strange.
And he ends up like, you know, defeating the giant dude, which then ends up, it's weird,
being a kid in at heart or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, he didn't kill him or something.
He chose not to kill him, and but
therefore he gets exiled.
Yeah. If you go in, two go in, one comes out, or something.
Leave. Yeah.
And it's like a big plot thing, and then he gets sent to the gulag, which. They end up just putting him on a horse. He wears his like big paper mache old style like parade type helmets.
Mm-hmm.
And then they tie his arms and put his helmet on, and they slap the ass of the horse, and it just rides off into the desert. And that's the gulag. And then I had to Google what a gulag was, because I was like, have I been wrong the whole time?
No. Gulag's a prison. It's a style of prison.
We're not able to get one.
I don't know.
It was weird.
Yeah, because they did the whole roulette of like what's supposed to happen to him, like, you know, Wheel of Fortune type, and it landed on Gulag, and I'm like, oh, okay. And then I think Ben was watching it here when I was watching the third one a couple of weeks ago, and he gets into the desert, the horse dies, he falls off the horse, and then he gets found by the kids. But also, like, I'm like, that's not a Gulag. That's not it. Okay. Exile would have probably worked on that choice.
Fix that in post.
Just put that over the top. And then the movie just bogs down at that point, doesn't it? It really slows to a real halt.
This bunch of kids that.
They're like the Lost Boys.
The Lost Boys.
Yeah, basically.
And
they're waiting for someone to turn up.
Yeah, they have this mythology that I think they just made up and clung onto as like a hope to keep all of the kids happy. But there's a lot of kids. And I'm like, who's having all these children? Like, there's a lot of different ages. It's very bizarre. The question
I was thinking too. I'm like, where did they come from?
There's a lot of them, but there's no adults. And the ones that are older are not old enough to have the children.
The kids, yeah.
Anyway, and they've made up this mythology. It's like a plane went down, so they're waiting for their captain, quote unquote, to come back and fly the plane and take them out. And then Max comes and he looks kind of like.
He looks similar to the pilot.
The pilot.
So they think it's him.
And then they're like, you're going to fly us out of here. And it's very strange. He makes some friends. Also, Justine, that was on Play School's in it. That's weird.
Yeah, there's nothing really for that, like, happens? 45 minutes when he's, like, there. He, like, teaches them a few things, like, about the world and, like, how to look after themselves. And
you know what I think? It was sort of the idea had carried on from the second one with the little feral kid, who was great in the second one, by the way.
When he throws the boomerang and it cuts off that guy's arm.
Yeah, he's, like, a little savage kid.
Yeah.
And I think they saw that worked in the second one and went, let's bring this in, but there was no relevance.
I think that the character in the second one, the feral kid, it humanized Mad Max as a character, right? Because he's supposed to be this survivor living off the land, doesn't look after anyone at all.
Not anymore. Not now. Like, his wife and kids are gone.
Exactly. And I think some of the characters from this settlement and the feral kid like teaches him to be human again. That's the whole point of his character arc in most of these films, anyway. Is to look after someone else again.
Yeah, it's his humanity.
Yeah. Whereas this third one, it was so forced. Like, there's a bunch of kids and they don't have any hope, and you've come in as like this savior character. You just know exactly what's going to happen. Like, you can see it. Like, oh, there's a montage of them training, and then eventually they head back, and I think they have to steal one of the cars from the settlement or something to try and get away or something. And there's another gyrocopter character. As well.
The guy from the second one.
Yeah, but it's not the same character. Same actor.
Yeah.
Different character.
It's weird.
I don't know. And there is a chase. There's a lot less car chases in this third one, Beyond Thunderdome. It's got the least amount of like action is what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
But there is a scene where there's like a train chase, which is kind of cool and inventive at the end. But in terms of like, you know how like it's pretty gruesome deaths when some of the people die on these like chase scenes that he does. This one was like pretty tame.
Yeah, sort of by the end of this one, like I'd forgotten about it because I wasn't as emotionally invested in it like I was the first two.
I can see why they waited like 30 years to make another one. Like,
yeah, they needed to have a fresh audience want to see this one.
Yeah, because this one kind of didn't do well.
And that brought us to Fury Road, which was like a reimagining of the saga. Obviously, Mel Gibson's way too old to play.
Yeah, so apparently George Miller, obviously Mel Gibson's had issues in the past with some of the things he said, his commentary, his kind of staple in Hollywood. But apparently George Miller's like, it wasn't a political reason why. He was just too old. They both agreed. He's too old to play the roles, some of the stunts. So
I think he was too old, but it was also oddly convenient to not have to deal with the...
That commentary.
It's like, oh, it worked out, didn't it?
Oh, that didn't work
out. That's why we're in 30 years.
It's basically, it's hard because it's probably better for the Mad Max series to do this because now it can be like the James Bond
character. Yeah, I think so.
You can just get different actors to play this character and have different adventures. I think that's a great idea. So when Tom Hardy came in, it's like, yes, it's still the same character. Yes, it is set after Beyond Thunderdome, but also he's the same probably age as what he was probably after Road Warrior. It's like a really, it's like a time reset.
Yeah.
But it's also set after. It's hard to explain, but it is.
It's kind of like we don't need to address the ones before. It's just a vibe.
Exactly right. You've got an idea of the character from the ones before, but also the way this starts as well, you don't even get an introduction to the character, right? No. You haven't seen him for 30 years.
I had no idea who he was. I didn't care. It didn't matter.
Wasn't the point of the film at all.
Because a lot of the emotional drive in this one anyway comes from
Charlize Theron, which is Furiosa. He's just along for the ride.
Yeah.
Right? This is probably one of my favorite action films of all time.
Genuinely, I watched this and I was like, oh, this is amazing.
Yeah. The first time I saw it though, I didn't have that feeling. I saw it in the cinema.
Really?
Yeah, I saw it in 2015 in the cinema.
I wish I had. If it comes back out on the big screen, I'll be going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw this and I was like, yeah, it was fine. And I just didn't. Yet again, I was at a time and place where I didn't appreciate cinema and I hadn't seen the first three by then. It was just going in and seeing this one by itself. But now that I've seen the first three, I've got a more deeper understanding of cinema as a whole. And when I rewatched this, because I've rewatched it a couple of times since now, each time I get something more out of it, I love it. I think it's just the perfect action film.
I do want to rewatch this one because obviously I didn't rewatch it recently. Because I'd only seen it about a year or so ago, but now that I've seen
where it came
from and then where it ended up going, I kind of want to rewatch this.
Revisit it, yeah.
I think this one emotionally, and I don't even remember a lot of it, but I remember the feeling I had. Mm. It hits more than some of the other ones. And I don't think, and sort of getting into Furiosa a little bit, but I don't think
to talk about them at once, I guess. Yeah.
I don't think it was necessary to have Furiosa to have Mad Max Fury Road work.
No,
and
exactly
it won
right.
a ton of Oscars.
Yeah, it did, yeah.
It was up for Best Picture that year.
Best editing by his wife.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is
like
really cool.
I think 4 or 5 Oscars for Craft and then was nominated for a bunch.
Yeah.
It's just a really gorgeous chase film that's just absolutely mental.
To get
the practicals are just outstanding, but then it has that heart of her character just trying and sort of losing it all. I think it works that she takes these wives that are just these vulnerable women and she's like, nah, F this, no more.
There's somewhere better, yeah.
We're going to go because this post-apocalyptic nightmare run by these like maniac men that are just not respecting us, that's not it anymore. But it's not overly political as a message in like
no
but it has the undertones like that's the story and then they just go on this balls to the walls chase for like 2.5 hours.
It's just over 2 hours,
but it doesn't feel like it.
No, it's what they managed to get in terms of story, emotional beats and all that in a chase film, like in a literally that's all it is.
It's
just a chase film. Oh, it's incredible. It's outstanding.
It's so enjoyable too. just...
Yeah, I... Look, if you haven't seen Fury Road, oh my God, what are you doing?
One of the guys that I work with, was saying that he's got the Blu-ray version.
There's a Chrome version.
That's in Chrome. Yeah, and that's...
Black and white.
Black and white, and that's how... If George Miller said if he could have had it, his cut, and put that out in cinemas, it would have been the black and white cut. And apparently all the...
Furiosa is getting one too.
All the emotional beats work really well in that black and white because you focus...
I'm going to try and find it.
On I need a Blu-ray player, but that's a second. That's another story.
Look,
I'm getting...
I've had many conversations with you about this.
Listen. I'll upgrade one day, but it doesn't make sense to do it right now, so...
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that was... Fury Road, I have so much respect for him as a filmmaker, having seen where he started with his other films, and then you see this one and you're like...
He's had a very interesting career.
This man's got vision, yeah.
He's done this, he's done Happy Feet, he's done Babe.
Yeah.
He's done 300 Years of Logging, and what was the other one he did? He's done one other one, I can't remember, but that itself is like a vast range of movies.
And apparently, so like these are the most violent, nuts films.
Oh, yeah.
But apparently everyone that works with him goes, oh, he's the sweetest man. He's so quiet.
Yeah.
But he's just so sweet. And then he's just like, hey, what if we just do this like...
Absolutely balls to the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like gratuitous violence in a fun way type fun stuff. Way. Yeah.
Apparently the production of Fury Road had a few issues with it as well.
Oh, really?
So yeah, I was watching this little thing where it was like some fun facts about Fury Road, and apparently Charlize Theron and Tom Hardy did not get along on set, and they had this massive, massive row. Apparently Tom Hardy would turn up to shoot 3 hours later, or pretty much most days he'd be like a couple hours late to shoot.
Hold that.
And one day Charlize Theron just kind of let him have it or a little bit.
She's a professional.
She was there. She was like waiting for like 3 hours in this truck waiting for him to turn up. And apparently she said something like, charge him $10,000 every hour that like he's late or something. And there was swearing involved. I'm definitely filtering it.
Yeah.
And then apparently he heard that and then came really close up into her grill and was like, what did you say to me?
Yeah.
And then apparently after that, she said, I don't want to be anywhere on set with him without a producer right next to me. So for the rest of the film. So apparently they did not get along very well. I think they're fine now.
But at the time.
Since at the time.
Sometimes that makes the best performance though.
Look, on screen, great.
But that I do have enormous respect for actors that absolutely despise each other.
But they can turn it when they're filming.
You watch it and you couldn't tell. There was a production that happened a few years ago and I can't name any names. And the leads... She hated her co-star so much that she was like, I'm not in the second one. Write me out. I'm not coming back. I cannot work with this man. And everyone on set knew how much they hate each other and were afraid that you'd watch the series and be able to tell. I watched that series. Wouldn't have known had I not heard from a few people. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm like, you know, the fact that you can, I mean, yeah, they're acting, whatever, but the fact that they can turn it off so much.
The fact that they can separate.
To do.
Well, I think a good actor does that though.
Like they definitely
do. A good actor can completely remove themselves from the role they're playing. And that includes things like ego.
Oh, yeah.
And anything else, any predispositions to someone. That makes a good actor. If you're going in there with a part of you in the character, that's when.
It's detrimental.
Yeah, exactly right. So, yeah, props to them that they can do it.
And I heard another story about, Fury Road. So the character that plays Immortan Joe, played Toe Cutter in the originals.
Yeah.
And so all the guys that were playing the War Boys would all get on set and be like, yeah.
Exactly right. He'd be a huge
icon.
Like icon for a Mad Max series that they got the villain from the first one to play the villain for the fourth one.
He sadly died, so he wasn't in.
No, unfortunately. And also,
Furiosa. It's
10 years later, so it might have been a bit older. So I think the actor who played him in Furiosa was pretty bang on.
Honestly, I didn't know. I couldn't tell.
Exactly.
There's not a lot. You don't see a lot of his face.
It's only the eye emotions.
Can we talk about how weird his design is? It's unnerving. Yeah. Pale, pasty white skin, some weird.
Some cover, like some shield that's see-through.
That has, is it, what's going through it?
You mean?
Some sort of, is it fuel? Some sort of liquid
I think it's some type of gas or something. I have no idea. But that, he's got a.
Through it.
Yeah, and at the back he's got a breathing apparatus that goes through to his mask, which is just teeth.
It's just teeth.
And then he's got like that big old chrome chain stuck through the. Yeah, it's very. The design's fantastic.
Is he the one that has the chains from the. Was that another
the nipples?
Different guy? Yeah.
No, that's the different guy.
That's
right. He's the one that eventually.
That's also a design. That's what I mean.
That actor's name is John Howard, and he was in All Saints.
Amazing.
That's how I remember him.
Oh,
as
my
a kid.
God. Yes. I pictured him again. I'd forgotten for a second.
Yeah.
The costuming in this, just phenomenal. So bizarre.
Yeah. He's wearing like it's like a suit, but it's like been worn for way too long. And it's got his nipples are cut out. Yep. And then he's got a chain
he's
going
got
from his nipples to somewhere
his,
else.
Like no, it's
his
like
belt.
Crotch belt.
Yeah.
That's
what
like
a design.
A, like a like a sort of a chastity belt of sorts.
And he's got a gold nose.
Yeah, like a fake nose because it probably got bitten off or something.
Who knows? But honestly, his designs are phenomenal. Oh,
and then you have Chris Hemsworth playing
Dementus.
Dementus in this one. He's got the similar nipple chains.
He does, but I mean,
his
he can
nips
pull.
Nips get ripped off.
Oh, that's right. They do too. Yeah.
I just was like, there's so many letterbox comments. It's just like, everyone's like, ugh. In that moment, we just sort of clutched our chest. It was like, oh.
But yeah, the one thing they definitely backed up from Fury Road was like the designs, the setting, the vibe, the atmosphere was still the exact same from Fury Road, which I was very thankful for because Fury Road was filmed in Nambia because they originally planned to film it in Australia in this certain part of Broken Hill, somewhere in the middle of New South Wales. Immense flooding.
Really?
Yeah, they even waited a year in like pre-production to see if it would dry up. It did not in time. So they had to go around the world scouting for a location that would look similar to the Australian outback.
Fascinating.
And they picked Nambia because it literally never rains. And so they filmed it there. Furiosa was filmed where they wanted to film it. So it is filmed in Australia. Yes. Yeah, I know. You can't really tell, right? But they picked a pretty bang on spot to look like the desert.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed Furiosa. Like, genuinely really enjoyed it. I don't think it was as good as Fury Road because it's a prequel. So Fury Road was like a perfect idea, right? And that's why they rebooted it. This one was just like, okay, we want to, now that we've been allowed to tell this story again, we miss it. How can we make something in this world? I think was
I agree.
They
like
got to that.
I agree with you. It was a prequel, but was it a necessary prequel? It's like, oh, here's a little thing that was in Fury Road that they half mentioned.
Yeah.
Now you get to see it. It's like, do we need to see that?
I personally don't think we need to. That being said, I watched this film and I had the time of my life.
I agree with you entirely. I very much liked it.
That it's not worth being told. It was very enjoyable and it was fun. But I think where it falls short, so to speak, is that it doesn't have the emotional gravitas that we already got from Furiosa in Fury Road.
Yeah.
It's tongue-tying, trying to get the head
around
this.
The issue I had was, because it's such a long slice of her life, like you get so many like parts to her life and segments, I didn't feel that emotional connection with her because you're just getting snippets, right?
Yeah. At the
beginning.
And
I feel like it was very summary of those parts.
When she was a kid, at the very beginning, and that's when she gets snatched from her family and where they live.
Oh, the green place.
Yeah. That's emotional because you feel sorry for her because she's a little girl also. Mm. So there's that as terms of like a way to immediately care for a character.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gets thrown in all these situations, but I don't think we spend enough time inner world to feel what she's feeling as all these tragedies are occurring. And then by the time she gets back to Immortan Joe and with the wives to let them escape, like –
Where Fury Road starts.
There's not a lot of purpose for her helping these girls.
No.
I feel like if they explored that a little more, kept her with Immortan Joe for a little bit longer, maybe she's got some beef with Immortan Joe. Fair. That would be.
Yeah, there was none, was there?
Tighter. No, because it was more just Dementus.
Yeah.
Which fair. Yeah. But then to have the ending of that film
kind of just completely 180. Just so that Fury Road could be ready.
They could have left it with more time in between, I think. Also because Charlize Theron is a lot older than
Anya Taylor-Joy.
Yep. But it's the way the story time goes is it's kind of the same time.
Yeah, so in the last scene, like, they've got Anya Taylor-Joy setting up the night before Fury Road, putting the wives in the back of the war truck, right?
Yeah.
And it's her playing it. And yeah, you're right. She's obviously a lot younger than Charlize Theron is, but I think you're supposed to just go, look, I'm not going to think about that too much. If they could get Charlize for that one scene, they would have. They would have, because it would have worked, and I think it would have been better for it, but I'm guessing she just wasn't available.
And look, this isn't like, I'm not criticizing it to criticize it. I'm just having a chat. And, no, and as someone
and we,
who's
and because we had half an hour in the car waiting for it to get out, we definitely kind of dissected it a little bit.
Where I think would have worked to give us a real emotional beat was maybe to have her get, at the end of all of this, she's stuck with the Morton Joe for a while, maybe a prisoner that of him again.
Would have been better.
And that gives you time to like, go.
She was locked into being there for a reason, which is why she needed to escape. But I feel like she could have escaped at any point.
At any point.
You know?
I feel like she needed to really get stuck there for a while, like leave her there and we go, oh God.
Yeah.
After everything she went through to get away from this
guy. She's now stuck there.
She's now stuck there for what? 15 years or so before she steals the wives and gets out of there.
Yeah. Like I said, I think there was too quick and too much of a top view slice of every part of this. Yeah. Like obviously she was going to be one of the wives and she obviously escapes. Then obviously she goes on this thing with Dementis. Then she comes back and then you're seeing very briefly why she takes them away. It's just for 2.5 hours, there's a lot of little parts that just didn't add for me to like the bigger picture,
the
emotional arc they wanted for this character. Saying that, some of the set pieces were phenomenal though.
Absolutely gorgeously crafted film. Like, just 10 out of 10, can't fault it.
For that, the part with Bullet Farm, Town, awesome in terms of like action and like the same thing. That has like the mini Fury Road part.
Yeah.
Which I was like a nice little nod back to where they've got the chrome war truck as well. That was really cool. But overall, still not as grandiose as Fury Road was.
No.
But it wasn't trying to be. It was supposed to be a more of an emotional, you know, journey of a film, which is really why it's called a Mad Max saga.
Yeah.
It's set over a very long time span. And it just didn't quite land for me, I think, just because of how quick and brief each slice was.
I think that's
I wasn't connected as well.
That's the only downfall of this film if you're going to fault it for anything.
Yeah.
Its emotional drive wasn't as strong. It was more fun and frivolous as a film than it really kept you caring for her. I was more just like, cool, let's just see what she's up to next.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see, because this has been at the moment flopping, quote unquote.
Yeah, but so did, here's the issue at the moment. So did The Fall Guy.
Oh, I'm aware.
And both of those films, like this is great. And I quite enjoyed The Fall Guy. There's faults to it, but it's a good film.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why? Why are these both failing?
Yeah. Like, I think it's an audience going thing. I'm curious to see where this ends up. And take the saga in terms of more films.
Yeah, there's one planned. It's
called, interesting.
Next one's called Mad Max The Wasteland.
Which could be about anything, really.
It could be about anything, but I also, it doesn't mean they have to bring Tom Hardy back as well. No. I think they might separate themselves from this little micro franchise they're building, like set around the Citadel and the Morton Joe. They could just do a completely different story, which they can.
Yeah.
Which would be cool. Also, fun fact. So you remember how Morton Joe has two sons in this one, Rictus and Scrotus?
Yep.
And Rictus is in Fury Road, obviously, because he survives Furiosa and he has a relevant part. But then Scrotus isn't in it, right? You're like, where the hell did that brother go? I did some digging.
Okay.
So around the same time as Fury Road came out, there was a game on the PS4 that came out called Mad Max. And it didn't do amazingly well, but it did have George Miller as like a story consultant on it. The main villain in that game is Scrotus, and it is actually some of the war boys are in it from the movies as well. So I've only played a bit of it, and way back in like 2018, I think I played it. I don't remember it. But yeah, so the reason why he's not in Fury Road is because he dies in the game, which is set in between.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that is a tie-in game to the actual universe, and this is why he's not in Fury Road.
Cool. I'm very excited to see where this goes. I think it's fun to have something that's so Australian but so interesting and just left of field and creative and amazing, like fantasy, not fantasies in fantasy, but post-apocalyptic.
Yeah, I not reality. Post-apocalyptic. I'm so glad that the audience doesn't know this yet, but we've got a Fallout episode coming out.
Yes, we
next
do.
Next, after this one, Fallout, the creators of Fallout got the idea from Mad Max, because there's a particular line in Beyond Thunderdome where they mention Fallout. This is the Fallout and the Half-Life and all that stuff. It's from there. So, yeah, I'm loving our Wasteland-themed stuff at the moment.
Oh, I'm always in for a post-apocalyptic type. I used to, there was a lot of those sort of shows on when I was a child, so we used to just like, and not much to do at certain points in my childhood, so I was like, let's just make weapons out of sticks and like, what if?
The what if stuff's great.
There's a lot of that in my childhood. Yeah. But yeah, I'm keen for it. I really want more. Even if it's not perfect, I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah, I'm digging this franchise. So the more they make, the I'm on board with. I'm
keen. Please.
Yeah, love it. Yes. Love it.
So that pretty much wraps up this one. We'll be back soon to talk about the next episode we're recording. But anyway, as always, thanks for listening. If you're enjoying this podcast, please give it a follow. And if you'd like, you can get in touch with us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at BingeList, or email us at bingelistandboxofficehits@gmail.com. Yep.
You nailed it. You got it right. That. No, you got that right.
Thanks, everyone. Yep. Happy listening. Happy Monday if you're listening to it on a Monday.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next week.
See you guys. Thanks.